everybody. My name is Glenn Hill.
Jacob Meyer.
Welcome to the Tactical Tennis Podcast. And today we're going to start by talking about why you shouldn't be on your toes when you play tennis. And I say start there because we didn't really plan out much beyond that starting point. And we kind of had this thing where I said, I think there's like 10 minutes worth of talking. And
I say that we could talk about this for 3 hours.
Right. Well, I'm sure we can, but I think we can talk about that for 3 hours. What I think we could inevitably do is parlay that into a much broader conversation. But, you know, one of the things I think that's bothered both of us a lot over the years is watching people coach tennis, and they're coaching with platitudes and dogma. You know, watch the ball, move your feet, stay on your toes.
Dude, we're 1 minute in and you've already used the word platitudes.
I have. What are you going to do about it? Huh?
This is some of the worst advice that I've ever gotten.
Well, they're all three, like just terrible, terrible pieces of coaching, right? I mean, really, watch the ball. Okay.
That's actually great advice. It's just really hard to do.
Well, it is, but more than that, to me is like of the things that I see people doing wrong. Like, watch the ball is very low on the instructional instruction that I'm going to give when I'm working with somebody, because if I have to keep telling them to watch the ball, I need to send them to an optometrist or a brain guy because there's something wrong. And so the reality is a lot of times we see coaches saying these same things over and over again, not because they're actually useful instructional pieces of advice, but because they're phoning in a lesson. You know,
that's not fair. It's not that they're it's not that they're phoning in, because I used to say stay on your toes. I didn't start fighting that one until I was probably like 19. And I used to say watch the ball well past 19.
Okay, no, I shouldn't. You're right. Phoning it in is a poor way. But I should say that it's almost like coaching by rote.
Here's what I would say. If you're a coach and you're listening right now and you're telling somebody, hey, watch the ball, what are you really frustrated with? Because the chances that you wanted to tell them, hey, watch the tennis ball, are like really slim. There's probably something else that you're trying to get to.
Right. That's probably true. Or perhaps the problem isn't the lack of watching the ball. Maybe there's something else going on. Like you said, I mean, like it's very, I find it very rare that I have to tell people to watch the ball over and over again.
Okay, so sometimes we tell people to watch the ball when there's other problems. But when it comes to, that was eloquent, don't you think? When it comes to being on your toes, this is different than watching the ball. Because if you listen when your coach tells you to be on your toes, you will be putting yourself specifically in a very poor position to move anywhere.
Yes. Yes.
Or so, to remain balanced.
Right. Well, yeah. So, I mean, obviously, if you're at home, and don't try this if you're driving, folks, because I don't want to be responsible for that.
Good qualifier.
But if you're at home and you just stand up on your tippy toes and just stand there, you'll notice that it's kind of hard to balance. It's not a great position. Like, it's certainly significantly more difficult to balance standing on your toes than it is to balance with your feet flat on the ground, right? And you might also notice as a part of this that you have muscles that are tight and tense and at the end of a range of motion of a joint, namely your ankle. So if we take any of our joints that move, which hopefully all of our joints move in some way, wow, that was special. So
sometimes they don't.
Well, but hopefully they are. And if you take any joint and look at its range of movement, right, the joint only moves because of muscles that are contracting or expanding on either side of the joint or around the joint. And so if you take a joint and you put it at an extreme end of its range of motion, that means that you have completely contracted the muscle that's pulling the joint in that direction. So if we go on our tippy toes, you are completely contracting your calf muscle. And the problem is, if my calf muscle is already at full contraction and then I'd go and try and move explosively, I am physiologically incapable of using that calf muscle to explode unless I first relax it again and then contract it a second time.
Okay. That's accurate.
Thank you.
What we're saying is, if you're on your toes, you can't move anywhere until you come off your toes.
Well, you can, just really much, much slower than you
really
would have
slowly,
otherwise.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, you're taking out a huge piece of puzzle. So here's the second part of it, right? I mean, if you've ever looked at, let's say, drag cars as an example, you might notice that they have kind of big back tires.
Like a drag racing car.
Yeah, drag racing car. And okay. That's not cars that dress up in drag. No, drag racing cars. Oh my god, dad jokes.
Wasn't sure first.
Dad jokes for days. Yeah, drag racing cars and actually sports cars. You'll notice that they, and I say sports cars, I mean like actual racing cars that are in professional races. They have big tires, like tires that are much bigger than normal tires. And the reason for that is they're trying to maximize the surface contact with the ground. Because that is the only way which the motor has of actually applying force to the car to move it, right?
I'm not going to go all physics on you, but we could talk about contact patches for days. So,
well, it's important. And the second part of it is, if I'm up on my tippy toes, I don't have very much of my shoe on the ground, which is another issue.
So tell me, like, how does this sound to you? The way that I think about it is, you can be a Cadillac or you can be a sports car. Okay? A Cadillac is I'm up on my toes and I've got these like nice big shocks and they're real soft. A sports car has really firm shocks. It's grounded. It moves really fast. Cadillacs are kind of like boats on the road. So, but at least they used to be. I mean, they probably make, and I know they make a sports car now, but whatever. So the question is, do I want to move fast or do I want to move slow? And if I'm using my calf as a shock absorber, then I'm slowing down my whole leg when I push off the ground.
Right. Sure. Well, I'm going to come back to the shoe comment for a moment because I think it is important because we're talking about movement now. And, you know, if we're going to talk about stuff for more than 10 minutes, we're going to kind of wander a little bit. And look, if you only have a small portion of your shoe on the ground, then you only have a small portion of your shoe that's allowing you to get traction on the court. And the more of your shoe that's touching the ground, the more traction you have. And that can be a limiting factor in the amount of force that you can apply. And that applies to braking as well. I just think it's important to note that getting a full shoe on the ground is an important part of moving well.
Yes, getting a full shoe on the ground is a hugely important part of moving well.
Okay, good. All right. So, since we're in agreement on that, yeah, the being up on toes thing is really a suboptimal position. But so if we're going to say that's bad, let's talk about what's good.
Yeah, so being on your toes basically means be slow. Having your whole foot on the ground is good, or almost your whole foot. Inevitably, some part is going to come off.
Well, at some point, yes. But like, if we're talking about if I'm in the position that I want to be initiating movement from, my foot's going to be on the ground, all of it. And yeah, my legs aren't going to be straight. And certainly none of my muscles are going to be at full extension already pre-contracted before the movement has even begun.
Right, meaning your muscle hasn't fully fired yet, right? You have to have some place to go.
Yeah, exactly. Like you got to leave some room for that whole thing to happen. So if we put it in those terms, then the movement or the position that we want to be in when we begin to move, or the position we want to be in between movements when we're about to start moving, you know, we would have a mild bend in the legs. The whole foot's going to be on the ground. And now we're going to have to start talking about the thing I think you don't want to talk about, which is a ready position.
I don't want to go to the whole ready position. We have to do a completely separate recording on the ready position. I think the idea is you're not up on your toes with your heels 3 inches off the ground in your ready position, okay? Most people will agree for that. So the reason one of the ways you can think about get off your toes and get your feet on the ground is specifically because you want to get into a good athletic position in which you can move in whatever direction you may need to move.
Right.
So it has to be pretty neutral in the sense that it can't be too biased one way or another. You can't only be ready to move sideways or only be able to be ready to move forwards or only be ready to move backwards. You need to be able to do any of those things. If you're on your toes, physically actually on your toes, then you are ready to move where?
Well, I mean, I don't think you're really much ready to move anywhere. Well,
I think you're ready to move down. Like, well, okay, literally, you're ready to drop your heels onto the ground. That's the only place you're ready to go.
Okay, grant you that one.
And then you have to get ready again to move wherever the ball actually is going to be.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So if you don't want to talk about ready position, well then what are we going to talk about?
Well, so I think that there's an important concept here that if somebody's telling you, hey, you need, like, get on your toes, get on your toes, get on your toes, I like to assume that there's actually a good reason that they're saying that.
Sure. But so what are they – if somebody says get on your toes, what are they actually saying to you then? What should we interpret if, you know, as an enthusiastic, willing to learn tennis student of the game, what should I interpret that as?
But what I'm saying is when I hear that, I think, okay, I'm probably not actually moving. I'm probably just standing around, or my energy level is too low.
Right. And see, one of the things that I tell people is, like, if a coach tells you to be on your toes, what they're really saying is be ready. And be ready means be in a good athletic position that allows you to move in all directions.
That's right. Hopefully, if I'm getting to everything and I'm moving really fast and stuff, they're probably not even telling me that. Because if you look ready, they're probably not telling you something to get you ready, right? They can see it.
Sure.
So if you're hearing, you know, get on your toes, then it's move around, or hey, you don't look ready, or you don't look like you're about to go do whatever it is that you need to do.
Right. That would be a good way to interpret it. So improve the readiness of your current position. Don't actually go up on your toes.
Right. Don't actually go up on your toes. And maybe don't tell your coach, like, no, I'm not going to go up on your toes.
Yeah, that's probably not an argument you really need to get into with them. I would just be a little more mobile. I would certainly look a little more alert, a little more ready.
If you think you can bounce around and stuff, but, like, if you watch the pros, they're going to bounce around. And then when it comes time for them to actually move, they actually have to stop before they can start running.
This is absolutely true.
Right. There has to be a moment where you say, you know what, my feet are on the ground and I'm in my ready position that we're not going to go too deep into right now today in this recording.
Right. I just want to point this out only because you don't want to.
Only because I don't want to.
And people have to blame you for this.
I studied biomechanics. I want to break down so many angles. I want to do like 10 hours of research before I even record for that. I mean, like, what if I miss something and I got published in the last 2 years?
Oh, my goodness. What are we going to do?
I know. I'll forgive myself.
Look, that's fine. I just want to be very clear to people who want to learn how to have a better ready position that they're not getting it today because of you.
Well, it's because of me. You can email me, and you're just going to have to wait. So I'm not sorry. Sorry, not sorry.
Okay. Well, so one of the other things I think we can talk about briefly that's relevant to this is the split step. And we don't have to break a split step down into all of its fine biomechanical glories, because I know that would probably give you an aneurysm right now. But what I think we can talk about is exactly what a split step does for people, like why you see professionals using it, why your coach tells you to use a split step, why it's important.
Okay. Can I define for you how I see a split step?
Well, yeah, because I think that's important. I mean, I think your definition of a split step is going to tie very closely into the why. It's almost going to be self-explanatory.
This is how I define the split step, actually, to like the pros on the tours when I talk to them. And I always start by asking them, okay, what's a split step? Show me a split step. I ask them a handful of questions about it. But when I look at a split step, this is how I think of it. The split step is that moment when you're actually moving, okay? And this is key. When you're actually moving, the split step is that moment when you have to briefly stop and put your feet on the ground and get in, you know, you get to some sort of a ready position, some variation of a ready position. but it's actually that movement where you're not moving anymore. It's like your body or your brain is using that moment to reassert its balance. Okay. So it's that moment that you use to get balanced.
Okay.
So if I'm running forward like a serpent volleyer, like Pat Rafter, we go to the film and you go, okay, where's the split step? It's that moment where he doesn't know if he's going to go right or left, but he knows he's going forward.
Because people will look at a split step and think, oh, I have to jump up in the air and land with 2 feet.
Right.
And if I don't do that, it's not a split step. And the reality of it is that that's one manifestation of what a split step really is, which is a gaining of balance. You know, I refer to it sometimes as an unweighting.
Unweighting is a great word. I try and teach people up to that. Because generally, if this surprised me a little bit, because I used to start with unweighting, but the pros didn't get that.
Sure.
I mean, I don't know why. I mean, I know why, because they hadn't used it before. But they were just like, what's that, right? Because they didn't study physics.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've studied physics and you know what unweighting is, it's like, stop there. Just unweight. You're done. You've got it. If you can unweight, you have a fantastic split step. Don't change anything.
Well, theoretically, you might have a fantastic split step.
Well, I mean, if you can actually unweight in a balanced position, like, you've nailed it. It's a hard thing to do, especially if you're coming out of a full run or changing direction or, you know, doing all sorts of stuff.
Sure.
But I think you nailed it the way that you talked about it. It's not like there's many variations of what a split step is going to look like. And it's not, oh, you need to jump this high or get this high off the ground or even get off the ground at all. It's not about where your toes are or how wide your feet are. It's about gaining balance and the ability to move where you need to move next.
Right.
Which is exactly the reason why you cannot be on your toes.
This is true.
I couldn't help myself. I had to go back there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, it's important to come full circle sometimes. And I think we have come full circle.
Okay. So this is how I think of split step, okay?
Right.
You said unweighting. How else do you talk about it?
I talk about it in terms of an ability to react to the possible outcomes of your opponent's next shot. So there are times where moving backwards is out of the equation.
Like when Pat Rafter serving volleys.
Right, well, not just that. Let's just say that I am, you know, my opponent's 6 feet behind their baseline. They're about to hit a forehand from just a kind of general cross-court position. And I'm 6 feet behind my baseline for whatever reason. Like, I'm probably not going to have to move backwards from there. You know, I think when we're reading the game and we're anticipating what's coming next, we can, as a general rule, kind of eliminate some possibilities. And hopefully have some idea of what's likely to come off my opponent's racket. But essentially, if I am going to move well, I need to prepare myself to move in order to be able to respond to what my opponent's going to do next. And that's really what the split step's all about. It's about not, if your opponent pulls you wide off the court, that you're not still running back towards the center during the instant they're hitting the ball, because that means that you're running towards the center, and that's your direction of travel. And if they go the other way, or you have to move in virtually any other direction, then you're going to have suboptimal movement in that direction. And so that's an example of bad movement, or why is split step's important.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, that's a good example. So I'm going to ask you a question that someone asked me a couple weeks ago.
Yes, fire away. I'm ready.
How does a split step make you faster?
Well, so that's an interesting thing, because it's actually, you know, theoretically possible that a split step can make you slower.
Mm.
So, I mean, if we take the example that I was just talking about.
Wait a minute. Hold on. You just said it's theoretically possible that a split step can make you slower.
Yeah.
Now, we started this off by saying, do not be on your toes. That's bad advice. Some people stopped listening right then. And now we're saying a split step might make you slower.
Absolutely.
these are like tenets of the tennis coaching world for the last 50 years or something. Yeah. We're guessing. So how?
Well,
what are you saying?
I don't know that necessarily that it's been a tenet that specifically is going to make you faster. But what I am saying, so if we, let's take that example that I was just talking about a moment ago, where let's say that I'm right-handed and my opponent pulls me wide off the deuce court and I hit a forehand and I'm trying to get back to the middle. There's going to come a point in my movement back where I have to make a decision. I have what would be considered an ideal recovery position, which would be, if let's say that I hit my forehand somewhat cross-court, then I'm going to have an ideal recovery position, which is going to be slightly cross-court from the ball.
Okay.
So it's going to be my side of the center line, but I'm still a ways from there. And at some point, I'm going to have a decision of I can either momentarily halt my sideways movement back towards the center in order to become balanced and get my split step and react in any direction to what my opponent's going to do next. Or I can prioritize my position over balance and continue to run in that one direction, even as my opponent's hitting the ball.
Right.
Now, so in this circumstance, split-stepping makes my movement to my left slower, but makes my movement in virtually every other direction faster.
Bingo.
And that's why we split-step, because ultimately you're taking the risk of, if you don't split step, of guessing where the next ball is going to come. And if you are wrong with your guess, then you have effectively surrendered the point.
Right. So we actually split step not to be faster, but so that we can handle all the shots that our opponent might hit.
Exactly.
So that we're ready for everything. Because if you don't split step and say you just turn and you're running, they just hit the ball behind you. And now you're screwed.
Now you have problems.
You're going to lose the point because you don't have enough time to stop and do a full 180 and go back there. You know, and if they did, they hit the ball really slow and you shouldn't be in trouble anyway. But so what you're saying is the split step actually slows you down. Like you're actually slowing down when you split.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I mean, that's exactly, you can't speed up and be balanced at the same time.
But we associate having a good split step with being a good mover and being fast.
Well, we associate it with being a good mover. And yeah, of course we do. But we define being fast not by your linear foot speed, but your ability to get to the ball. And getting to the ball is a matter of reaction and efficient movement.
I like how you just like slurred linear foot speed in there. Like, we just measure linear foot speed in everyday life.
Well, no, we don't, you know. They've done some of that with people on the Pro Tour using all the ShotSpot technology, funnily enough. But, yeah. Well,
the point being, we're not measuring how fast, like, you run 100 meters or 50 meters or even how fast you run from one side of the court to the other side of the court. What we really care about is, can you get to every ball?
Right. Exactly.
Which is how sometimes you can have like a really big overweight player, but they can get to everything. And you think, man, they're fast. It's weird.
Yeah, they're a really good mover. What the heck is going on? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the ways actually you look at people and you judge, like, you know, you make assessments of what level maybe they used to be at when they were at their prime.
Right. By how well they move now or how well they move. How will they anticipate, how balanced they are, these kinds of things, sure.
Yeah, and just you see how they move.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so. Get off your toes. Don't be on your toes. Understand why you're not supposed to be on your toes. Because you need to have your foot on the ground in order to push off the ground.
Yes, split step.
Effectively. Split step when it's appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, look, you are, like I said, you reach a decision point when you're moving. And sometimes the right decision is to keep going. It's to not split step. Don't tell anybody I said that.
I love that you said that because I actually say it all the time. So I'm going to ask you one last question. Sometimes I see, especially when working with like young kids, I see them work a lot on actually being up on their toes, like, toes, 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 almost like running on their toes in place and then like split.
Okay.
Or I see them practice like like jumping into a split step again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the kind of stuff that would be effective to improve their split step? Because it, I mean, if the split is just getting balanced and being able to get to the ball, that's a good thing. We want to get better at that. But are those kinds of things going to get us better?
Well, I think they will. But the question that you're not asking that I think needs to be asked is there a better way to get better at those things? To that I would probably say yes. Look, I think that spending time being on your toes and moving your feet quickly can be a helpful way to improve your balance. You know?
Right. So generally, that's going to improve your split step.
That's a physiological challenging thing to do. Like, that takes motor skill.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it really does. It's not easy to, you know, tap dance on your toes really quickly. That's not an easy thing to do. And so I think spending time doing that has some value. What I think we have to be careful of is that we don't do that to the detriment of practicing other, actually, like, more directly applicable movement skills that involve having our actual feet on the ground.
Okay, so practice having your feet on the ground. If you are practicing being on your toes, understand that what you're probably doing is something that's just a challenge. It's almost like a strength and conditioning thing. Like, I'm doing something that's tough, my body's going to respond by getting better at it.
Yeah, I think it's a fair statement. Like, I think you are going to be improving your balance. You are going to be improving, you know, some aspects of physical performance, but that's not the technique that you want to use. So I would say it's something akin to this, right? If I go into the gym and let's say I do cable flies to strengthen, you know, parts of my chest and my shoulders, well, that's great. That can help me hit a better forehand. But I'm not going to use that exact movement to hit a better forehand, because there's a better way to hit a forehand than just take a wild, you know, swing with my arm. I'm going to use the strength that I gain from working out in the gym and employ that through the technique that I have of what a good forehand is in order to hit a stronger forehand or a harder forehand or a better forehand. And likewise, this might be a way to improve my balance. It might be a training tool to improve my calf strength, but I'm going to employ superior movement technique when I actually move in matches.
I could have sworn you said car strength, but I'm pretty sure you said calf strength.
I did.
So
I have an accent.
It's fine. So this is good, because now I feel a little bit less like I wasted time, like in my junior career when I was doing all this stuff on my toes. Like, I felt like, hey, I'm getting better. But I also felt, you know, I'm not getting better fast enough.
Mm.
So this makes sense, because it's like, you know, I was getting stronger. My balance was getting better. Like, I was getting better. Those are good things. But probably that, well, it seems clear now that wasn't optimal. Right. So I'm not crazy, and you're not crazy if you think, oh, you know, I'm doing this, or my kid's doing this, or, you know, I'm a coach and I'm doing this with my students and they're improving. But that's, it's not going to be the optimal way to go about it. Right. So it seems like, and this is probably a whole nother recording, right? Separate working on the balance itself versus working on, say, the timing of when is it appropriate in different situations? At what point is it appropriate to split step?
Sure. And the hard part there is there's not a single perfect answer to that, because, you know, it's always about context.
It's going to change person to person. It's going to change on all the circumstances.
Situation, yeah. I mean, like I said, it's just there's never going to be a clean answer to that, you know. I'll just say it like this. Anytime that you choose not to split step, one of two things has to happen. Either you have to have made a successful prediction on what shot was going to come next, or you're so far out of position that the time that you lose by not split stepping is worth the distance gained. Or I should say the reaction, the ability to react that you lose by not split stepping is worth the distance the recovery distance that you gained by not split stepping.
That sounds right.
So hopefully I got that right the second time around.
It sounds right. To me, yeah. it's really simple. When you don't split stop, you just have to be right. You have to know where the ball's going. If you're not...
Well, but see, I'm not sure. I don't actually quite agree with that. I think it's possible to be wrong.
Yeah, it is. It is possible. I'm just saying you don't want to be.
But there's times when it's not really about the guess. If I'm far enough out of court...
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't. Yeah. Stopping to split step, I can't recover far enough if I split step that it's actually, you know, split stepping, I might as well just give up the point.
Look, right? Most of us are not fast enough to get that far out of the court.
That's actually a very interesting way of looking at it.
I'm just saying, well, because unlike you, like, I've been fat and overweight and tried to play tennis, and I've been in good shape and not overweight and tried to play tennis. And I know that when I was fat, I just couldn't get that far. That was never a problem that comes up. That's a problem that a very fit, high-level player has, is that I track down this ball, like Rafa, you know, over on the court next to me, and now I just have to book it to get back close to the court for the next ball.
Right.
So I've seen you do this many times. So your thinking is sound.
Okay.
You have no cause for worry. You have not been inaccurate.
Well, that's a relief. All right, folks. I think we'll stop there before we ramble all night about movement, although apparently not about ready positions. And if there's something you... What's that?
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
That's right. So if there's something you'd like to hear us talk about other than movement, shoot us an email. You can reach me at glenn@tacticaltennis.com.
I'm jacob@tacticaltennis.com. We shall never talk about ready positions.
We will one day. We will. We're going to get there, folks. I promise.
Yeah, okay.
But we do have more coming up on tennis workouts or how to work out better for tennis. Among other things, and you know, do us a favor and share the podcast with your friends and your family, or just people you play tennis with, even if you don't like them very much, because we don't spend any money to advertise the podcast at all, and this is the only way that we can get more listeners and grow.
You nailed it this time, and tell me what you don't like. I love to hear it. I really do.
Yeah, tell him what you don't like and tell me what you do like, and hope to hear from you folks. Have a great day.
Have a good night. See ya.